Novus, the new voice. Vox Novus, the new dimension. Vox Novus, thought and movement leaders who will share from their experience and offer tools to help us navigate our rapidly changing world. My name is Victor Furman. Welcome to Vox Novus, the new voice. In 2018, the Centers for Disease Control reported that an estimated 20%, or 50 million adult U.S. citizens, suffered from chronic pain. It went on to say that the overall chronic pain prevalence in the U.S. is higher than that of diabetes, heart disease, and cancer combined. The studies concluded that chronic pain is the number one disability in America. The public's perception of chronic pain is that it's unsolvable, and the best one can expect is to live well with it. The reality is that modern neuroscience research has revealed answers, and it is a solvable problem. Most of this data hasn't penetrated into the thinking of mainstream medicine. How may we successfully address chronic pain? In doing so, are there also answers to reducing the devastating effects of COVID-19? My guest this week on Vox Novus, Dr. David Hanscom, has dedicated himself to finding these answers and has been successful in helping others live pain-free. He's committed to bringing these concepts out into the general awareness. Dr. Hanscom is an orthopedic complex spinal deformity surgeon who was based in Seattle, Washington. He quit his more than 32-year surgical practice in 2018 to focus on teaching people how to break the grip of chronic mental and physical pain. His mission is to reintroduce true healing into medicine. He feels that doctors should be given the time to listen and understand their patients. Difficult life situations surrounding their medical problems have a tremendous impact on care and outcomes. Dr. Hanscom is the author of Back in Control, A Surgeon's Roadmap Out of Chronic Pain, now in its second edition, and Do You Really Need Spine Surgery? Take Control with a Surgeon's Advice. His website is backincontrol.com, and he joins me this week to discuss his experience, techniques, and how these may also be used to address the body's response to COVID-19. Please join me in welcoming to Vox Novus Dr. David Hanscom. Good day, Dr. Hanscom.
Thank you. That was a very kind introduction. I appreciate that. Very thorough.
And thank you for joining us. I believe your work is something that's crucial in today's world, especially with everything that's been going on since 2020 began. So please share your path in medicine and how your personal challenge with chronic pain changed your understanding and approach.
Well, I trained in a major spine fellowship in Minneapolis, which I completed in 1985-86. And I came out of there with a zeal. I was determined to do surgery on anybody I could. I felt guilty if I did not find a reason to do surgery. I felt like most surgeons that surgery was the right answer. I spent 8 years, I would say, being a zealot. I was very excited about doing spine surgery. I was enthusiastic. I was disappointed when people didn't do well. I was devastated with bad outcomes. And I worked really hard at solving people's pain with spine surgery. So I was one of the more aggressive surgeons in the country. In fact, Seattle, when I first started, was 9 times more aggressive in doing spine surgery for back pain than any place else in the entire country, and I was part of it. In 1993, a paper came out of Washington State that showed that only 22% of people had resolution of their pain after 2 years from surgery. 22%. Then the papers kept getting worse. Every paper that came out after that showed the same outcomes. I thought the results were 90%. I did notice in my own patients that the results were maybe 50-50 at best. I wasn't totally impressed by this. I had no idea what chronic pain involved, what was entailed with it. I was like every other surgeon saying, well, if I can't see it, it must not be there. And nothing could be further from the truth. So in the meantime, around 1990, I dove into my own, I'll call it the abyss of chronic pain. And for 13 years, I just kept going deeper and deeper and deeper. And by 2002, I was actively suicidal. And it turns out that anxiety is the pain. The mental pain is a bigger problem than the physical pain. It's actually processed in the brain the same way, but I didn't know that. So I tried everything, of course, being a physician, and everything I tried made everything worse. And I came out of it really by accident in 2003, but I didn't figure out the neuroscience until around 2009. From then on, it's been game on. We've watched hundreds and hundreds of patients go to pain-free, including myself. And I'm fine. And I was as miserable as any human being on this planet. So it's been quite a journey, and I feel very honored and privileged to be able to share my tools with other people. But it turns out, against my training, that pain is supposed to be just managed. I'm fine. My patients are fine. They're not in chronic pain. So it's very exciting, very rewarding.
That's wonderful, considering the overprescription of painkillers throughout the years, because that was seemed to be the go-to answer until people realized we were having an opioid epidemic in this country.
Right. Well, that's part of that. I was in the 1990s where they were telling us to prescribe medications, take your prejudice out of it, and just do what you need to do to get rid of people's pain. It turned out that opioids are actually inflammatory. We didn't know that back then. It's called upregulation. And high dose opioids actually inflame what's called the glial cells of the brain. They throw off what's called inflammatory cytokines, which are small proteins, and they inflame the brain. And I didn't believe it at first because I was actually an opioid believer. I don't have a moral issue with it either way. But what we found out is that on opioids over time is there's not only a tolerance problem, but the brain gets super sensitized and people hurt more. That was a disaster. And as you we know, we have an opioid disaster right now. And it turns out that really giving opioids for anything more than about 10 days is really contraindicated. Plus, you have so many other choices now.
Now, you had mentioned the inflammatory.
They're called cytokines, CYTOKINES. And you have probably heard the term used in terms of the COVID epidemic. And they're very small molecules, about 120 amino acids long. They're very small proteins that are the signaling molecules between cells. In other words, if there's an infection and one white blood cell goes to the site of the infection, it sends off these little cytokines to signal other white cells to come to the same spot. There are trillions and trillions and trillions of cytokines and cytokine receptors on every cell in the body. That's how the body talks to each other at the cellular level. But when you're under threat of any kind, physical or mental, part of the defense mechanism is not only adrenaline and cortisols or the stress hormones, it's the immune system. And the immune system fires up, and it turns out that physical threats like bullies, bosses, viruses, bacteria are all physical threats that fire up the immune system. But we also know now from the neuroscience research that mental threats, unpleasant thoughts, unpleasant emotions, and even worse, repressed thoughts and emotions fire up the immune system. So it turns out that mental and physical threats are pretty much the same process, same soup. And humans have a problem called consciousness. Every animal has this defensive survival response. That's how we stay alive. And humans have developed a language, and so we put a word on it called anxiety, but it's just an inflammatory reaction.
So anxiety is actually a neurological reaction.
It's a neurochemical reaction, right? Absolutely. And people look at stress in terms of a psychological construct, and really it's just your body's response to the environment. And so, when, of course, there's positive stress and negative stress, but most people think of stress in terms of negative terms, and people think stress is psychological. It is not. It is the response to a threat. And so, it's a total body response. I do not like the word mind-body syndrome anymore because mind and body are just a unit. One clearly cannot function without the other. Just like you can't fly a Boeing jet without a computer, you cannot run your body without a brain. Your brain cannot exist, of course, without a body to hold the sensors that tell it what to do. But the way every living creature survives, clearly starting from bacteria, one-cell organisms, is they process the environment through different sensors, and then the nervous system interprets these sensations, and you take appropriate action to stay alive. The species of creatures who didn't pay attention to these sensory sensors didn't survive.
Now, tell us about this plan A, Thrive and Survive COVID-19. What's that about?
Well, this is a good segue from the stress because we know that chronic stress kills people. We know people live on the average about 7 years shorter than the average person. We know that the stress, we talk about stress management, which is a huge misnomer, because the stress that is the killer is the stress that you can't control. And so what happens when you're in chronic threat, your body's fired up, and what happens instead of survive and thrive is you train your body to actually process threat appropriately and productively, you begin to thrive. So as you thrive, why it allows you to survive, and just surviving stress and surviving life actually does not lead to a very productive life, very enjoyable life. It also leads to a shorter life. So what the process is, there's about 10 or 12 basic categories of steps you can do to train your body to respond to threat in a more productive way.
And we're going to be talking about that program. Now, you offer an 8-week program called the DOC, or Direct Your Own Care Journey. How did this program evolve?
Well, it came out of my own experience. I mean, I had a profoundly severe case of chronic pain. It was, I could look at any patient in the eye and say, look, you might be suffering as much as I did, but not more. I mean, it comes in different forms, but my suffering was extreme. I had no way out. So I came out of it by accident in 2003, and it began with these simple expressive writing exercises. And I picked up a book by David Burns called Feeling Good, and David Burns said to write. So I started to write. And within 2 weeks, after 15 solid years, my anxiety started to drop, my symptoms started to abate, and by 6 months later, I was fine. And so what happened, the process evolved out of my experience. Then I started to understand the neuroscience around 2009, not till 6 years later. Then the neuroscience research, especially the last 12 months, has made it exactly clear what the problem is. So it's the body's response to a threat. And so as I started to share these tools with my patients, they began to go pain-free, and probably well over 1,500 patients. And so what the doc journey is an evolution of steps that you can't go from A to Z. It's not positive thinking. It's not a stepwise process. It's a series of, well, it is stepwise in a way, but it's a series of concepts that allow you to train your brain to feel safe. And when you're safe, your body's chemistry changes dramatically. But the sequence evolved from my journey, but also watching patients that did really well, also patients that did not do so well. So that's how the sequence evolved, and we're excited about it because it's a much clearer sequence and very much tested by hundreds of patients of how to come out of chronic pain.
And is this predicated on an unlearning of the what they call the reptilian brain, the polyvagal system of fight or flight?
Well, I would call more about retraining it. In other words, I ran across to Dr. Stephen Porges about a year ago. I ran into him through a common friend. And every Wednesday, we have a scientific work group that talks about the polyvagal theory. It turns out that the autonomic nervous system, which is the part, is sort of the grand central station of the nervous system. And what happens, the autonomic nervous system refers to the part of the body that covers digestion and heart rate and breathing, et cetera, because it's automatic. So it's called the autonomic nervous system. It turns out that under safety, your autonomic nervous system stimulates the immune system to calm down and put out anti-inflammatory cytokines, puts out growth hormone, dopamine, serotonin, all sorts of drugs that are great drugs, including oxytocin. So in that chemical bath, you can thrive and also regenerate. Then under threat, the same autonomic nervous system puts out adrenaline, cortisol, histamines, but also these inflammatory cytokines. So the entire immune system is fired up, but we're also finding out through the lens of the polyvagal theory that this midbrain or the autonomic nervous system is the central processing unit of the whole nervous system. So the reptilian nervous system doesn't have part of this, what's called the vagus nerve. They have part of it that allows you to be defensive and slow down, but it doesn't have the capacity to help them socially co-regulate like mammals do. Then humans have language, which add on another layer. So the whole polyvagal theory is around how humans evolved and how we use the word co-regulate with each other to be human and to evolve.
In your studies, I'm not sure if you've actually looked into this, but in the past 500 years, has there been a radical change because of the Renaissance and then modern technology that ensued?
Yes and no. Right now, It's interesting because you look back, it's centuries and centuries of healers, the witch doctors in villages, and historically physicians. They've been healers. And when you look back on it, you realize that they engender a sense of safety. And safety begins with the doctor-patient relationship. And in 1927, Dr. Francis Peabody wrote a very famous article called The Care of the Patient. And remember, the way every living organism survives is you take in sensory input, your body has neurochemical changes that create physical symptoms. You cannot treat a patient outside his or her environment. You have to take environmental considerations into account because that's the root cause. If you treat just a migraine headache and that person's going home and being abused by their spouse, guess what? The headaches are not going to go away. So understanding the whole person is a big deal. So if you look at the history of medicine, it's around people and physicians and healers providing comfort. And in modern medicine, we've gone the opposite direction where technology has taken over. We're treating just symptoms. We're not engendering a sense of safety. So even though a significant part of medicine does incredible, miraculous cures, right now, medicine has become predatory. We're actually hurting people. That's why I quit my practice because of this, because we are completely ignoring the root cause of threat versus safety.
And we used to talk about a doctor having excellent bedside manner. What would you suggest to physicians today in terms of changing their approach to their patients?
So here's the deal. I'm not honestly throwing physicians under the bus. The compassion index of medical students is higher than the average. We want to help people. Ironically, burnout rate now is about 60-65% amongst physicians. What prevents burnout the most, by the way, is talking to the patients. We want to talk to our patients. The business of medicine is forcing us to see a certain number of patients per hour, to a certain amount of productivity. And so if I hadn't gone through my chronic pain process like I did, I would not have the insights to talk to my patients like I did. I was sort of at the end of the day, sort of compelled to do so, because I what I had gone through. But before I went through my process, I was one of those people that rushed through the office, did what I needed to do, get through the day. And right now, the business of medicine has kidnapped us. They've kidnapped the patients, they've kidnapped the doctors, they're forcing to see patients very quickly. So listening to the, well, first of all, going through the process yourself and really connecting with yourself is number one. So I always encourage physicians I work with to actually learn the tools themselves, calm themselves down. But once you can't really connect with anybody else unless you actually can connect. I'm sorry, you cannot really connect with your patients unless you're really connected to yourself. So I know that's sort of a long answer, but from a motivational standpoint, physicians are hyper motivated to talk to their patients. That's what keeps us going. But we're not allowed to in this day and age. That's why I actually quit my practice.
And would you, if you had the ability today to reshape medicine as it is, in addition to learning the techniques that we're going to discuss in our next segment, what would you say to the industry per se, and to the insurance companies, and to everything having to do with the business of medicine?
It's actually pretty simple. We have all sorts of pre-authorizations, we have contracts, all sorts of stuff. The only thing you have to do to actually solve medical problems is triple or quadruple the time, the value of the time spent talking to the patients. Create the space to understand the problem, and it would change the game. Because what happens, because you're in a rush, doctors order tests quickly, they do procedures quickly, they don't know the root problems, they don't know the patients. Patients don't feel safe. Either way, doctors don't know the patients, patients don't know the doctors, and it's just an absolute assembly line process. So simply changing the fee schedule to allow and actually require physicians to talk to the patients would make a huge difference. The other side of the equation is doctors are burned out, we're under a ridiculous amount of stress, and you talk to any physician, and this is universal, where industry does not care about the physicians. I mean, we have all these different things we try to do for the patients and, patient satisfaction, et cetera. Nobody cares about the doctors. So we should have resources to teach us how to handle stress, give us help when we need stress. Right now, we're under an incredible amount of stress. People just cannot believe how much stress we're under. And then if we actually seek help in any way, shape, or form, we actually lose our hospital privileges. Doctors are trapped every way you can imagine.
My guest is Dr. David Hanscom. We're going to be talking about his path to directing your own care journey. Dr. Hanscom, please tell our listeners where they can get your books and your website and find out more about your program.
The website is backincontrol.com. Two books. One is called Back in Control, A Surgeon's Roadmap Out of Chronic Pain. The second book is Do You Really Need Spine Surgery? Take Control with a Surgeon's Advice. Then I just put out it was called The Doc Journey, found at thedocjourney.com, which is a guided journey through the book and the concepts in a much more efficient, interactive way.
And you also offer a podcast.
Well, I do quite a few things. I'm doing podcasts every week. I write a blog every week. I do a interview with Healy. It's on the X-Zone Broadcast Network, where I interview patients that have healed. It's incredible. These stories are incredible. So I do that every week. And so, yeah, there's a lot. It's all on my website, by the way, backincontrol.com. It will give you access to all those resources.
And we'll be back with more of Dr. Hanscom after these words on the OM Times Radio Network.
Free your mind with OM Times Radio, IOM FM. OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
A social distancing tip.
Keeping your distance from others is important in slowing the spread of coronavirus. So here are some fun things to do alone. Read a book, take a walk, unpack your suitcase from that trip you took last September, paint a self-portrait, catch up on a TV series, do a puzzle. Remember, we should all stay home to lower the risk for everyone. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
The Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council present the story of Tom and Levi.
Tom is the smartest man I know. He's been a professor at two major universities, been a teacher for over 40 years. One day, he told me that he was having problems in his classes. I think one of the students had asked the question and he didn't remember the answer. And I also noticed that he was letting his class out earlier than they were supposed to let out. And he was telling them that he was doing it as a favor to them, but I think in reality, he just wanted to get out of there. I was really starting to worry because I saw something was wrong.
Levi and I talked about how it would change our lives, but he was there beside me, and my love for him was just immense.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. Visit alz.org/ourstories to learn more. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Bill Maher. I can find humor in almost anything, but one thing I never laugh about is cruelty to animals. If you don't get the joke either, write People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, 501 Front Street, Norfolk, Virginia, 23510.
Back on Vox Novus, my guest this week is Dr. David Hanscom. We're talking about his approach to directing your own care. Now, you offer that 8-week program called Direct Your Own Care Journey. How did this program evolve?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, I went through my own process, but I could not figure out what happened. I've been on a 30-year journey to find out what happened. In 1990, I went from being a fearless surgeon to panic attacks and crippling anxiety in one day. It could not come out of that hole for 30 years. So my own process was just incredibly perplexing. So I kept searching and searching and searching. So by 2003, I came out of the hole, but I didn't know what happened. So then I started sharing things with my patients, a lot of them that did not work, a lot of them that worked. And I started reading the neuroscience and watching my own journey. I kept evolving my own journey. Then patients started becoming more and more consistently better. Then the last 5 years of neuroscience research has been stunning. It tells us exactly what the problem is and actually tells us exactly how to solve the problem. The diagnosis is right there. So that's how the process evolved. And so what the doc journey is, it represents a sequence based on awareness, hope, forgiveness, and play. Before you can solve any problem, you have to be aware of the issues around the problem. It takes time. If you're going to build a house or buy a car, you're going to research it. Same thing with your medical care. You have to understand the problem. Your doctor has to understand the problem. So if you're not taking time to talk to your doctor and they don't know you, they just really don't understand the problem. So the nature of the problem is really critical. So it's really critical to understand your situation, the nature of pain, and also the nature of the solutions, which I'll talk about in a second. The second thing is hope. Research has shown that a sense of optimism and hope is actually a healing issue. What happens in chronic pain is that less than 20% of physicians are comfortable managing chronic pain, less than 1% enjoy it, but we're not trained correctly. Treating chronic pain has been by far the most rewarding and enjoyable phase of my career, because you take people without hope and give them hope, it's just game on. So understanding that it's solvable, listening to other people's stories is really critical. That's why I do a 1 hour a week podcast with people that have healed. And then forgiveness is a big deal, because people in chronic pain are angry. They're trapped. Why would you not be angry? So when you're angry, let me just segue here just for a second. When you're angry, it represents a very high, elevated inflammatory response. Your body's fired up. You've doubled the nerve conduction. Your quality of life has dropped through the floor. The research shows that over 9% of patients that are in chronic pain have not forgiven the person or situation that caused the problem in the first place. But interestingly enough, the person that they're most angry at is themselves. So forgiveness turns out to be a huge deal. Essentially, every patient that has gone on to heal has gone through anger and forgiveness. Everyone. Now, you can't get there from the start. That's why the process is an evolutionary process, because you have to understand the problem, calm down, have some hope. You can't just jump right into forgiveness, because there's a lot to forgive. The more legitimate your anger, the harder it is to let go. So forgiveness is a learned skill, not philosophical. It's just a learned skill of just taking your life back. Then the final aspect, which I think overlaps with your work tremendously, I call it the spiritual journey. I use the word play. But you can't solve chronic pain. The more you try to fix something, the more you pay attention to the problem. You reinforce it. It's like learning a new language. If you try to learn French by trying to fix your English, you can't do it. If you try to fix your chronic pain, you're paying neurological attention to it. And the solution lies in precipitating what's called neuroplasticity, where you stimulate your brain to move in a direction that you want, which means you create a vision. And the vision I suggest is called, quote, an enjoyable life, unquote. And so you create a vision and pursue it. So that involves play, relaxation. I call it the spiritual journey, giving back. In other words, what do you want? What do you want your life to look like with or without the pain? And as you move towards that vision, you move away from the pain. But you can't get there just by starting there, because what doesn't work is positive thinking, which is a way of suppressing negative thinking. So I know I just called a tremendous amount of ground there, but I guess what I'm trying to say with the doc journey is that it's an evolutionary process. You have to allow yourself to heal. There's a sequence that's been consistently predictable, and it's self-directed. You don't need major pain clinics.
And we're going to actually go through each of those steps right now, because you're talking about it being a process. And the first part of that is awareness. And your first step is called learn about chronic pain. What do we need to know?
Well, again, it's about threat versus safety. And chronic pain is a complex problem. It's affected by many factors. Acute pain is necessary for survival, to avoid too hot, too cold, too bright, too loud, etc. So you have to have acute pain to survive. There is nothing useful about chronic pain, nothing. So you understand that the nerve conduction increases, your brain is sensitized, you're subjected to a chronically unpleasant impulse, nobody believes you, and you're trapped. You lose hope. So they've estimated that the impact of chronic pain, actually, I read the article here recently, the impact of chronic pain on the quality of life is actually worse than having terminal cancer. because nobody believes you. So it's a neurological problem, and there is everything wrong with you. There's a situation that medicine's come out now with, which I think is the ultimate insult, called medically unexplained symptoms, that is untrue. If you're under constant threat, your body's full of inflammatory markers, your brain is sensitized, your nerve conduction is doubled, there's no blood supply to your brain or your bowel or your bladder, so you have spastic bladder, spastic bowel, your nerve conduction increases, so you feel the pain more. There's over 17 physical symptoms that occur because your body's, I'm sorry, over 30 physical symptoms that occur because your brain's under chronic inflammation. I had 17 of these at the same time. I had migraine headaches, ringing in my ears, burning in my feet, skin rashes, all sorts of stuff. They are all gone. Because if you learn tools to normalize the body's chemistry, then all the symptoms disappear. So chronic threat translates into physical symptoms. So the term medically unexplained symptoms to me is the absolute insult, because when your body's on fire and inflamed, of course there's something wrong. So that's it. That's basically understanding it's a neurochemical problem. Your body is way out of whack. Your balance is out of whack. And somehow medicine's gotten focused on structure being the cause of the problem, and it's the physiology, it's how the body functions, is how the problem works. Once you understand the problem, the solutions are not very difficult.
That second step is called expressive writing. How does writing help us address the pain?
What happened to me with my 15-year journey is that David Byrne said to start these writing exercises. And his book, Feeling Good, is a great book, and I thought it was the book. It turns out there's over 1,000 research papers that documents simply writing down your thoughts starts breaking up these obsessive thought patterns. So remember, thoughts are a threat that you can't escape from. You can suffer with them, suppress them, or mask them, but you cannot escape your thoughts. They're always there. So what the writing exercise says, I think, is simply you cannot control your thoughts, but you can separate from them. So the thoughts are on the table. There's now a space between you and the thoughts that's connected with vision and feel, which is part of the unconscious brain. And you tear them up instantly because you don't want to analyze them, because you'll reinforce them, and you want to write with freedom. Somehow that first step of separating from your thoughts is absolutely a critical step.
The third step is the one that most of our listeners are very familiar with. That's the active meditation. How does meditation help to reprogram the neurophysiology of pain?
Well, what I'm excited about with Dr. Stephen Porges, the polyvagal theory, is that mindfulness, meditation, relaxation, acupuncture, rubbing your forehead, certain music, breath work, breathing, the humming, like the humming in the back of your throat, all those directly stimulate the vagus nerve, which is powerfully anti-inflammatory. And so instead of being mindfulness, meditation being some, quote, psychological phenomenon, what you're doing is you're directly stimulating the vagus nerve. It's very fascinating stuff. And Dr. Porges has been studying this for over 40 years. So that's been a huge factor, is that anxiety is the word humans use to describe this inflammatory response. It's a response to a threat. It is not the cause. Anxiety is a physiological issue. It is not primarily psychological. It is not. So Dr. Porges, and I have to agree with him, hates the word anxiety. Basically, it's just a elevated sympathetic response or fired up nervous system, however you want to call it. And the first thing I tell people to do is, look, get rid of the word anxiety. It's not a good word, because people think it's psychological. The unconscious brain processes about 20 million bits of information per second. The conscious brain processes 40. But if you didn't have anxiety, I'll use the word elevated sympathetic response, you wouldn't survive. You wouldn't survive more than 2 minutes. You wouldn't breathe. So it's necessary for life. You can't get rid of it. It's not subject to rational control. That's why the way you decrease anxiety is simply decrease the inflammatory markers. Where your mindfulness meditation and humming comes into play is directly drops the inflammatory markers.
I recently saw a film in which I believe these were Tibetan monks had a practice of meditation that they were actually able to change the temperature of their skin to protect themselves when it was cold, to raise their body temperature.
Oh, it's fascinating. So that's the essence of the Doc Project, is that there's many advanced techniques. And the Doc Project, to me, is the foundational work that gets people out of the hole, starting to thrive. Then there's an endless number of practices to keep reprogramming your brain. So, yeah, absolutely. There's a I think you probably heard of this gentleman called Wim Hof, H-O-F.
Yes. He does that practice. Iceman. Yes.
Yeah, I'm going to, my wife thinks I'm out of my mind, and I sort of am, I guess, but I really want to go over and work with him.
Mm-hmm. He's the gentleman who submerges himself in a bath of ice and actually can change his body temperature to raise its body temperature to protect himself against the cold. So
right.
Using meditation. The yep. fourth step in your program is sleep. Do most Correct. Pain sufferers have inadequate sleep?
Well, 40% of Americans, by the way, have inadequate sleep. As there's a higher percent of people in chronic pain. And it would seem logical that people in chronic pain can't sleep because of the pain. However, the research shows it's the other way around. So what happens is that there's a large study out of Israel that showed that lack of sleep actually caused back pain, caused it, and they did not find the reverse causation. Then another study shows that if you miss one night of sleep, your pain the next day is almost doubled. We also found out that sleep is anti-inflammatory. And so when you're not sleeping, of course, you don't cope very well. It actually fires up the immune system. It turns out that sleep has been, right from the beginning, the number one factor to deal with. You got to get sleep. So I don't really work on people's pain at the beginning. I work on sleep.
And what do you recommend to people who have difficulty sleeping?
Chapter 14 of my book is all about sleep. There is things like called sleep hygiene, where you don't drink caffeine after 12 o'clock, you don't exercise late in the evening, you don't go to bed until you're ready, you avoid watching stimulating programs like the news these days, etc. So you just work on calming yourself down. Then if that doesn't work, there's over-the-counter medications. The expressive writing exercises have been documented to help people fall asleep. We always recommend people looking at childhood trauma at some point, which is a major factor in your nervous system being fired up or not. So there's a series of steps that are outlined. There's eight categories of steps you can do to get yourself to sleep. But when I was doing this on my own, I spent 4 years as a primary care spine physician. This is after many years of doing major spine surgery. I just went right after sleep. And usually within 4 to 6 weeks, with or without the pain, we could get people to sleep. I would often go, the other thing with chronic pain, the sleep disturbance is severe. And I often went to pretty strong medications relatively early, but you just have to sleep. Really, the rest of the program barely works, if at all, without sleep.
The fifth step that you share is don't share your pain. Now, you spend 5 minutes on social media, and it will clearly demonstrate that a large group of us live the old adage, misery loves company. What happens
right.
when we discuss our pain with others?
Well, the solution for chronic pain lies in creating a virtual desktop in your brain. In other words, it's like learning a new language. These pain circuits are permanently embedded in your brain, just like phantom brain pain or phantom limb pain. It occurs in any part of your body, and these are memorized permanent circuits. So the key to solving chronic pain is creating alternate circuits or detours around the old circuits, and the new circuits don't have pain. And I'm convinced you can reprogram your brain around anything. So it turns out if you complain about your pain, where's your attention? It's on the pain. We've held workshops over the years where the number one rule was not discussing your pain. I had no idea until I went to this workshop about how much people in pain talked about their pain. And I was one of those people. When you're in pain, it's consuming your life. You talk to your friends, you talk to your family, you're on this endless search for a cure. Why wouldn't you be? So it turns out that's where your attention is. So you reinforce the circuits. You also wear out your family. Chronic pain is devastating to families. So that one tool, no, discussing your medical care, talking about your pain, complaining, giving unasked for advice or criticism is allowed. In other words, be nice. But that has been as powerful as a tool as the expressive writing. It's been unbelievable. And the fun part for me personally is watching the impact on the families when this person who complains about their pain all the time, all of a sudden the family load is just lightened dramatically. And people forget when you're complaining about your pain, you're not exactly the person that your family wants to be around. It doesn't help their day. So then it goes back and forth, what's called mirror neurons, is that you sort of take your family down, then they take you back down, and it goes back and forth and back and forth. So yeah, it's not discussing your pain, it's just had a profound effect on people's speed of healing.
And from those of our listeners who'd like to participate in the DOC, the Direct Your Own Care Journey, how do they go about doing that?
The book is called Back in Control, A Surgeon's Roadmap Out of Chronic Pain. My website, backincontrol.com, gives you an overview of the process, but also gives you some ideas of how to get better. This week, today, I'm releasing a product called The Doc Journey, which is a sequence of steps that mirror the steps people have taken that have healed. And so it's a straight line journey with lots of teaching points along the way, but that's at thedocjourney.com. In other words, the DOC, Direct Your Own Care Journey.com.
And we'll be back with more of David Hanscom after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
America, your children have an amazing superpower. That's right. They can help save lives by simply washing their hands. Just 20 seconds of thorough hand washing after they've coughed or sneezed or been outside can help fight against the dastardly spread of germs. Armed with only soap and water and hands, your superhero can protect you, your family, and everyone out there in America land. Amazing! Find out more at coronavirus.gov. A message from the CDC and the Ad Council.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
Know that feeling? Like every door is closing and you just can't see a way out? Being unemployed, underemployed, or just out of school feels a lot like that. But when you find the right tools, suddenly everything just clicks. Getting on that path may be easier than you think. A good place to start? Go to findsomethingnew.org. At findsomethingnew.org, you have access to resources that help develop new skills. Skills that will position you for careers in today's growing industries, from healthcare and manufacturing to cybersecurity and alternative energy. Plus, you can take advantage of online courses, certification programs, apprenticeships, and more. So you can take yourself from unemployed and uncertain to empowered and prepared for what's next. Find your path to a new career today. Visit findsomethingnew.org. A message from the Ad Council.
Back on Vox Novus, my guest this week is Dr. David Hanscom. We're talking about his work in terms of directing your own care journey, the reduction of chronic pain with a series of wonderful steps. Off air, we were talking about this group that you're a member of that does a weekly practice of chanting, of oming, per se. Tell us some more about that.
Well, it's a little different than that. It's a group session that I hold every Tuesday and Thursday at noon. And by the way, anybody's welcome to hop on. And we started with an exercise where we do a call active meditation, where you just sit back in your chair, and everybody just sit back in your chair in a second, and take a deep breath in and drop your shoulders. And sometimes we'll just go, And I'm not as familiar with meditation as I would like to be. But what I found out from the neuroscience research is that when you hum or do the om type sounds, that you're directly stimulating the ventral part of your vagus nerve. And what happens is very strongly anti-inflammatory. When you do what I call active meditation, where you just put your attention on a different sensation for a few seconds, what you've done, you change the sensory input from racing thoughts to a different sensation. And, for instance, everybody just drop your jaw muscles for a second, drop your shoulders, let your hands go. And take a deep breath and feel the back of your chair. And you've also switched the sensory input to your brain to relaxation. In other words, instead of your racing thoughts creating tense muscles, your relaxation has actually changed the input to your brain. Again, very anti-inflammatory. Breath work, just slow breathing, not even attentional breathing, just slow breathing will actually directly stimulate the vagus nerve. Certain music, like lullaby type music, directly stimulates the muscles in the middle ear, which stimulates the vagus nerve. Rubbing your forehead stimulates the fifth cranial nerve, which again stimulates the vagus nerve. Breathing through your nose stimulates the production of oxytocin, which is called the love bug, social bonding drug, which again is strongly anti-inflammatory. So what I'm excited about the last 6 months meeting Dr. Porges is that all these things in the meditation world that I thought were sort of, you know, as a physician, we tend to be sort of cynical, have deep basis from a neurophysiological standpoint. They directly stimulate your anti-inflammatory response. And very fascinating.
And what's that website for listeners who would like to join those meditations?
So it's my website, backincontrol.com. And it's, again, just a 5 or 10 minute meditation warm up, but it's a group situation where I do 10 minutes of didactic, a little bit of discussion, then about 20 minutes of small group discussions. And what we also found out that a very strong anti-inflammatory action is being in a group. And what it does is stimulates the production of oxytocin, which is the social bonding drug, which again is anti-inflammatory. So we have 30 or 40 people show up every Tuesday and Thursday at noon Pacific time. Again, it's on the website under the calendar. And just hop on the Zoom link and you're in. And it's just been a remarkably enjoyable experience. We've had 6 or 8 people in the last 3 or 4 months go to pain-free. They just flat out have no pain.
Wow, that's beautiful. That's really wonderful. We had touched upon this a little bit earlier. Author and speaker Brian Tracy said, "You cannot control what happens to you, but you can control your attitude to what happens to you. And in that, you'll be mastering change rather than allowing it to master you." How does awareness of the way we respond help us from triggering pain?
The signature concept of the DOC process is what I call the ring of fire. In other words, stress isn't the problem, it's the response to it. Instead of being stress automatic survival response, you create a little bit of a space. That's what the expressive writing does or meditation does. So you have a threat, you create a little bit of a space, and instead of positive thinking, which suppresses negative thinking, which is a problem, is positive substitution. So it's in that space when you do the substitution, what you're doing is physically changing the structure of your brain. Your brain changes shape. Every second, new neurons, new connections, all sorts of things are happening in your brain. Again, it's called neuroplasticity. So that space is really critical to create that change. So expressive writing does that. Deep breathing does that, creates a little bit of a space. You're dropping down your inflammatory response. So again, it's awareness, separation, then redirecting. And the metaphor called the ring of fire, is that just visualize a circle with the outer periphery being blue. There represents enjoyment, fun, adventure, just life in general. There's a center red ring that represents anxiety, frustration, and fear. And the center is green, which is contentment, safety. What happens is that I was raised in an abusive childhood. I was trapped in the red ring. I did not know a green ring existed. I didn't even know a blue ring existed. But at age 15, I actually jumped out of the red into the blue and became incredibly productive, happy, enjoyable, all sorts of adventures. But what I didn't realize that I didn't know what the center was. I didn't know where it was. And I didn't realize that I was in the blue because I was outrunning the red. I was trying to outrun my mind. So then I went through a horrible burnout and got stuck in the red. But this time I knew what the red was. I didn't know what it was before. And it was miserable. That's what I call chronic pain, is extreme anxiety. So I ended up in the center by default. I had no place else to go. I had a very small center, and it was quiet. I was looking around and going, what do I do next? So it turns out that really the metaphor for the DOC project is that you get to occupy the whole ring. So some people think it's a goal to be in the center all the time and be relaxed and safe. That's not true. You don't live your life there. You can get trapped in the center. Turns out that every adventure, every challenge you take on involves anxiety and frustration, and you cannot get rid of anxiety and frustration because it's life. It keeps you alive. So what happens if your blue activities on the outside emanate from the center, you have to cross that red ring every time. So it's based on awareness of what part of the circle of life you're in at a given point. So this morning I woke up sort of a little bit in the red, so I had to drop my shoulders, do a little bit of writing, relaxation, and I went into the green. Then right now I'm in the blue. I'm talking to you. I'm enjoying it. But of course there's anxiety. Am I talking correctly? Am I talking too fast? Am I saying the right things? That's anxiety, right? It's nothing other but anxiety, but it's normal. If I was on your show and totally didn't care or was unaware, I would not do a very good interview. So anxiety is necessary, but what's fascinating is I've developed the skills to process anxiety, assimilate it. That ring has become fairly narrow, and the green center has begun to grow. So I had a much bigger green center. So I'm not trapped in the center. I always used to think, well, the goal is to be in the center. I would feel badly if I was in the red ring. But becoming aware and allowing yourself to feel the red, feel the green, feel the blue, then you have a choice. And the choice is to use the tools to go whatever direction you want to go. If you're in the red and want to stay in the red, fine, be in the red. But don't pretend you're not in the red. You want to make a choice to go into the blue and just get busy, that's fine. If you want to take a break and go to the green, that's fine. But you have control. In other words, the goal of the project is not to be in the green, not to get rid of the red, and not just not to be busy all the time. You get to occupy the entire circle of your life, but by your own choice.
And the choice is balance.
Well, that's a big topic. That one I'm going to have to disagree with you on. So the problem is if you have balance, then there's a little bit of, you're keeping track a little bit. So I think the key is awareness, that you want to become aware that some people balance is, I mean, I work 16 hours a day. I'm okay with that. Most people couldn't do that. But if I have a little scorecard in my mind about balance, then I'm a little bit frustrated at not being balanced. So it's sort of being aware, being connected and aware, and sometimes you can have balance, and sometimes you cannot, and it's okay not having the balance. It's okay being anxious. It's okay being angry. Because what happened to me personally, I got really, I would use the word obsessed about being in the green, being there, feeling badly when I was out of it. And then I read a couple articles about how balance actually in and of itself tends to be a sort of a treacherous word. So I agree with you, balance is good, but it's not that attainable for most of us most of the time, especially right now with this COVID epidemic. So then, it's a bit of a long conversation, but it's really around awareness and allowing yourself to feel anxious, feel the pain, feel peaceful, feel excited. So it's basically connected and engaged thinking is the way I would frame it.
Okay, I can buy that. And when I say balance, I really wasn't alluding to the fact that you're keeping score. It's just that you were being mindful of where you were in that ring.
Right. So I think for people that are advanced with your skills, that's true. But for in my world, people in chronic pain are pretty desperate. And that's why again, the dog journey is a sequence, because we talked about the word play, spiritual journey, giving back. And I have to tell you, if you mention that concept within the first two or three visits, they want to kill you. And it took me a long time to figure this out, because they're struggling to stay alive. They're struggling to survive. And they're looking at me going, you're talking about the word play? Are you kidding me? So, yeah, that's why the sequence is so critical, is that I say, look, just do some homework, understand the problem. And then you have to allow yourself to heal. You can't fix yourself, but you can engage in tools that allow your brain to change and heal. So the first thing I tell people is give yourself a break. You're suffering. You're going to, quote, fail a lot. But the key is persistence, moving forward. And it's just remarkable how I'm just incredibly inspired by people's will to live, people's will to thrive. It's pretty unbelievable. I have one gentleman who had 27 surgeries in 20 years, suicide attempt, high-dose narcotic. He's been pain-free for 4 years. He's fine.
Wow.
So I don't know how I did not think that was possible, by the way. Just did not think so.
You say that as adults, we often forget the joy of playfulness we experience as children. Do we need to play more?
Absolutely. I mean, play during the day is the same thing as dreaming is at night. It's how the brain develops. It's how we negotiate boundaries, negotiate skills. There's what Dr. Porges calls co-regulation. So play is probably the number one thing as far as your mental health, physical health. It's anti-inflammatory. It changes the body's chemistry dramatically. And so when you're in a state of play, there's really not a better chemical state to be in. The problem is that's why it's so key to understand that obsessive play to distract yourself doesn't work. That's where you de-energize these anxiety frustration circuits, these powerful unconscious reaction, compassion emerges, play emerges, giving back emerges. And that's why you have to get de-energize all these circuits that are caving in on you first to allow the other stuff to emerge.
Absolutely. My guest, Dr. David Hanscom. Dr. Hanscom, please tell our listeners one more time where they can get your books and find out more about your amazing work.
So the books are available both on Barnes & Noble and Amazon. It's Back in Control, A Surgeon's Roadmap Out of Chronic Pain. And the other book is Do You Really Need Spine Surgery? My website is backincontrol.com. That will give you an overview of the project. And I'm excited about what I'm calling the DOC journey, the DOC journey, Direct Your Own Care Journey, which is a self-directed program that will take you along a pathway that's been trodden by hundreds of patients that have been successful. And it's just some combination of blogs, videos, group sessions, really just an overall process to help you come out of chronic pain. The exciting part for me, by the way, it's very much of a self-directed process. You don't need major medical resources. We do provide group coaching along the way, which is, or I use the word facilitation. But we're excited about it because once people absorb it and start moving forward, almost by definition, they can't and don't turn back. It's been a lot of fun to watch.
Wonderful. Dr. Hanscom, thank you for sharing this wonderful work so desperately needed in our world today.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate the chance to share my views.
And thank you for joining us on Vox Novus. I'm Victor, the Voice Furman. Have a wonderful week.